Welcome to episode 10 of Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie and I'll be bringing you the news, reviews, interviews and recommendations of the next must-see theatre. We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, the next hot ticks and friendly advice on where to sit and how to get the best tickets. School's out and the Christmas break has begun, and I've been busy seeing as much theatre as I can. In the last week, I've been fortunate enough to attend a preview, an opening night and a premiere, and I've been backstage chatting to several actors. I've created way too much material for just one podcast, so you'll have to look forward to the next few podcasts where you can hear me chat with Gemma Sutton, who plays Kate Draper, and Ferdy Roberts, who plays Dr. Walker, on opening night of Girl from the North Country at the Gielgud Theatre. I was also lucky enough to attend the previews ahead of the world premiere of Sleepless the Musical, and I will be reviewing both of these in the next episode of Theatre Audience Podcast. And now onto the main reviews. Death of a Salesman by Arthur Miller at the Piccadilly Theatre. Soho Cinders at the Charing Cross Theatre with a backstage interview with Tori Hargreaves and Michaela Stern. And Curtains, a musical comedy and backstage interview at the Wyndham's Theatre with actor Corey English, who plays the part of Oscar Shapiro. Death of a Salesman at the Piccadilly Theatre. So this is written by Arthur Miller, and he wrote this over 6 weeks in the spring of 1948. And by 1949, it had had 742 performances, which put it among the 50 longest recorded Broadway runs of the time. It received the Pulitzer Prize for Theatre and was later filmed. There have been a few film versions, and my favourite was the 1985 Dustin Hoffman, Kate Reid, and a very young John Malkovich. In this play, Miller defined his aim as to set forth what happens when a man does not have a grip on the forces of life. So Miller was born in New York in 1915. By 1947, he'd written All My Sons, The Crucible in 1953, and A View from the Bridge in 1955. He was married three times, most famously to Marilyn Monroe. And this play, Death of a Salesman, was first presented in the UK at the Phoenix Theatre in July 1949. So the action takes place in that same year in Willie Loman's house and yard and various places in New York and Boston. So this production is eagerly awaited by me. I've had the ticket for 3 months. There's been a sold-out run at the Young Vic, and it is a critically acclaimed production. It transfers here for 10 weeks only, and it's directed by Marianne Elliott. Now, Marianne Elliott, as you'll be aware, was the director of Curious Incident in The Dog in the Nighttime, also Company and Angels in America. Miranda Cranwell has been the associate director with her on Company and Angels in America. So this is a tour de force. And they really are bringing a unique version of this play. So this is one of the greatest plays of the 20th century, and they are seeing this through the eyes of an African-American family. So I'm looking forward to seeing this unique take. The Times have billed it as a fresh revival of an old great, and the Daily Telegraph say this masterpiece resonates and devastates afresh. So it's the interval at Death of a Salesman, and my initial thoughts are entirely based upon the fact that I've got grand circle seats and I've got sightline problems and creaky seats and people eating lots of snacks. That aside, it's a beautiful production, interesting set with pieces of furniture suspended and some outstanding performances. Particularly from Sharon D. Clarke and her beautiful singing as we moved into the interval. Looking forward to the second half, but desperately sad that I'm not sat in the stalls. So I've just come out of the second half of Death of a Salesman at the Piccadilly. And Marianne Elliott and Miranda Cromwell have really sensitively reimagined this production. Their interpretation is beautiful. This tragedy concerns the death of 69-year-old Willie Loman, the salesman, and also the death of the American dream. Willie represents all those who have become entrapped by the wrong dream and sacrificed life. The play is a montage of memories and dreams and arguments and confrontations which make up the last 24 hours of his life. This fragmentation and hallucination is beautifully executed in the set design by Anna Fleischel, and this has been wonderfully lit by Aidan Malone. The central conflict of the play is Willie Loman's inability to accept that being well-liked is just not the be-all and the end-all. He believes that that's the only thing that gets someone through life. He's really stubborn and set in his ways, and this affects not only his life, but everyone around him, especially his wife, Linda, and his two sons, Biff and Happy. He will not accept change within himself and society. He's lived in the same house for 25 years. He's got a month left on his mortgage. And the house used to be surrounded by space. And now it's closed in and surrounded by new apartment blocks that have grown up over the years. He's worked at the same company for 36 years and he's now had his wage taken away from him. He's struggling with his pride and he drives 700 miles a day. Pretend that he still has a job. It's this diminished responsibility of a man who's borrowing money from his neighbour and friend that is indicative of this sort of mental breakdown that Willie Loman has. And Wendell Pierce makes his West End debut in this role. So he's previously known for TV and film, so things like The Wire, Suits, and the film Selma. And he really does evoke this full demise of a man struggling with his own demons. And this week he's been nominated as Best Actor in a Play by What's On Stage. And the rapport between him and his onstage wife, played by Sharon D. Clarke, is really, really tender. She evokes this sensitivity and beautifully emotes through her singing as well. This tender care that she has for this husband of hers, this cantankerous husband, whom she dearly, dearly loves. And she sort of, we see this sort of sadness inside her as she knows that he drives 700 miles a day and won't tell her that he's lost his job. And she beautifully plays this role. She has also this week been nominated by What's On Stage as Best Actress in a Play. And I remember seeing her Olivier award-winning performance where she got Best Actress in the production of Caroline or Change at the Playhouse Theatre. So the rapport between those two is beautiful. And the sons, Biff is played by Chokbe Derizu and Happy Loman is played by Natey Jones. And they have really strong characterisation and the beautiful, tender flashback moments that happen on the apron stage really do show how the relationship has changed between father and sons in their past when they were at college and now. And how it's really, really affected them. So some really sensitive performances from all the actors in this beautiful production. So I'm joined by my colleague and theatre technician, Gareth, who also was fortunate enough to see the show. Tell me about the amazing production qualities.
The production qualities, for me, can really be summed up in how well it showed the concept of flux or intangibility. The set being very much almost the shell of a house really showed how the home that the character Willie has brought to life over the time that he's been living there, for him no longer carries as much meaning as it should. And the fact that it was the shell of the house as well as the lighting that cast a lot of shadow in the frames of the windows and doors really gave a lot of depth and an eerie kind of quality to the intangibility of the stage space as a whole.
Mm, it really was the sort of metaphor that linked in with the themes and issues of this search for this American dream and it being quite empty and hollow.
Yes.
What about the lighting?
The lighting for me was absolutely superb. The use of angles, and as I mentioned about the use of shadows, it really created an element of depth within the space. Not only from, as I said, coming through the windows and doors, but the amount of backlighting and very obvious kind of side lighting and lights coming through very narrow passages, creating harsh streaks across the stage, is very intrusive, just like those memories of the past that Willie was having that were causing him to have these moments of almost psychosis or breakdown. And it was really amazing to see it done so well, combined with the actual physical actions and repetitive performances of the actors when they would go into these breakdown kind of...
Dream sequence. Yeah, it was very, very cleverly done. Mm-hmm. We were like, oh yeah, pinch some of those ideas. And then obviously the sound was enhanced with this sort of underscoring that created tension and mood.
Absolutely. There are moments of low drones as well as the use of animal wildlife sounds like crickets and at moments birds chirping to really kind of display the depth of the space and how this world is very much kind of playing out in the back of Willie's mind, and those things that you don't automatically notice are constantly there affecting you and guiding you through the story very much from Willie's perspective. Mm-hmm. And again, on the sound, my favourite thing about the sound in this production was the use of slide guitar as a simulacrum for human voice, and how at moments when they were on the phone or at moments where Willie was speaking to his son Biff, who was not actually there but he was speaking to him as if he was on the chair, they would use slide guitar, and the inflection of the slide guitar was almost a perfect copy of how human inflection is. And I've never seen a slide guitar used like that before, and for me it was truly groundbreaking.
I mean, it just added to that the whole feel of the time, the jazz. And you were lucky enough to be sat in, I was very jealous, in the dress circle right at the front. So talk to me about that, that view, because I was up in the grand circle and it did spoil my enjoyment of the production, I won't lie. So talk me through that.
Being sat kind of so low down, being able to look over them meant that getting to see the full, and I keep going back to it just because I was amazed by it, is the depth of the space. It almost felt like it went on almost with no end backwards, with how the entrances weren't very kind of closed off. There seemed to be a point of entrance that then expanded out the other side, as if there was this whole other world backstage that the actors were coming in and out of.
Yeah, with the staircase. We were like, we knew they were going upstairs.
Yeah.
We knew the bedrooms.
You could see them interacting with effectively the world off stage, as it were. And as well, the amount of flown elements that would come in and out and how they shift. Even like in transitions where they wouldn't come necessarily all the way down. Like sometimes they would shift slightly and alongside pieces of set on the floor that would move or raise or lower.
Clever, the windows and then the moments where he was right behind them, and it just helped the audience. I thought it was lovely, the build of the apron out the front. However, for Grand Circle, absolute waste of time. Could not see the actors, which is a real shame, because when I went to stand at the front of the Grand Circle in the interval and have a look over, that would have been beautiful, because that was the yard, essentially. Well, thanks a lot
for
talking to me.
Thank you very much.
Top tips for Death of a Salesman. So this production is highly, highly recommended. Great reviews, 5 stars across the board. The show closes on the 4th of January, and there's nominations in for What's on Stage for Best Actress and Best Actor. With the Christmas holidays looming, prices have absolutely rocketed. I would recommend you don't sit in the Grand Circle. You pay a little bit extra and sit in the stalls or the dress circle. The sixth form students and I that went, we felt disconnected from the action, being so far away from the stage. Your best bet now is to go on TodayTix and try and get the £25 rush tickets. It opens online at 10 a.m. each day, or to go to the box office and see if you can get any returns. The last remaining tickets, even on some of the best websites, range from £68 right up to £218. I've just seen some for January the 4th at £194.43. So this clearly is the hot ticket.
Soho Cinders at the Charing Cross Theatre. So this is a new production of the Enchanting musical and is a reimagining of Cinderella, but with a modern Soho twist, with lyrics by Anthony Drew and music by George Stiles and a book by Anthony Drew and Elliot Davies. It is no wonder that this has been a huge success. These guys were the National Theatre's award-winning musical team that brought us Honk, and also some of the writers who provided the score for Mary Poppins the musical. So it first premiered in a 2011 gala concert production at the Queen's Theatre, now called the Sondheim, and it had a full-scale world premiere at the Soho Theatre in 2012 with Jenna Russell of Sunday in the Park with George and Bridges of Madison County fame. In 2016, it was revisited at the Union Theatre. And what's it about? So it's about an impoverished student, Robbie, who becomes romantically involved with engaged London mayoral candidate James Prince. His lap-dancing stepsisters become the least of his problems. James and Robbie's worlds collide, forcing them to fight for their own fairy tale ending. With politics and sex scandals and true love, it's a real mix of emotions, and it celebrates London's colourful district. So I'm particularly looking forward to popping backstage before the show and having a chat with Tori Hargreaves and Michaela Stern, who star in this production. So I'm backstage at the Charing Cross Theatre with Tori and Michaela, who are in the cast of Soho Cinders. Hello,
yay,
ladies.
Hello.
Hello. So they're literally getting dressed for the show and doing a little bit of makeup as we go. So if there's noise of people coming in and out of the dressing room, it's just very exciting backstage. So ladies, to tell me about the show. I'm going to see it later tonight.
Yay.
So I, you know, other than what I've read and all the fantastic reviews and a couple of people have said, oh, you must go, it's really, really good fun. Just tell me a little bit about the show.
It's, I knew you, you she never throws it to me. It is, it's really fun, but it's also got heart. It's got everything that you would want in a musical, I think. It's very funny. The characters are all relatable and believable. Mm. And but it's got a lovely story as well. It follows themes about pride and love, friendship. Mm.
Well, the show itself is a LGBTQ plus twist on Cinderella. So it's a modern update in which Cinderella's a guy. Mm. He's a gay guy living in Soho, and the whole show's set on Old Compton Street, which is the most LGBTQ plus street in London. Yeah, exactly. In the heart of Soho, surrounded by gay bars and fun. Old Compton Street itself is just, when you go on there, you just see so many different characters and
types of people.
Types
and
of colour. People.
Yeah.
Lots of colour and lots of pride. And
lots
that's
of energy
really,
and
yeah. lots
people
of energy.
Watching.
Yeah.
And that's really what the show is. The show is like a giant ball of energy.
Yeah, it is.
That's probably how I'd describe the show. It's a giant ball of energy that's constantly kept up in the air but goes on like different journeys, so it's like thrown to people in different ways.
That's very,
thank you.
Very, very good, actually.
Thank you very much.
So tell me about your characters then. Tori, what character are you playing?
So I play a lady called Marilyn Platt, who is a lawyer, and she's engaged to what's his name?
James Prince,
who is running for mayor. And she's really strong, she's lovely, she's a gorgeous character. She's she has quite a difficult storyline, I think at the beginning you don't really know how to take her.
No.
She's quite, she doesn't do much in Act 1, really. You just see her and James together, yeah. And then in Act 2, she's her storyline develops, which is cool.
Mm.
And you?
I'm less of a developed character. I'm one half of the ugly sister duo, the stepsisters, we're put in inverted commas. And we are what it says on the tin. We have nothing to do with the storyline at all.
Other than the Cinderella plot.
Other than being a stock character from the Cinderella and sort of like that's the base of the show, if you will. We add absolutely nothing to the storyline.
They add a huge amount of humour.
We come on, we laugh, we sing a big song, we belt our faces off, we laugh even more, we come off, we go back on and do the same.
Brilliant. Pure entertainment.
Yeah,
That's literally all we do. We just laugh, belt, go off, come back on and do it all again.
They're the light relief in the show.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely the relief in the show, yeah. You, and it's funny because you can feel that as an actor.
Oh, really?
When you walk on stage, you can feel they're ready for you to come on. Because the story's not a heavy story at all, but there are scenes which require some concentration. There are characters that are unbelievably witty, and punny, and every line is, you sort of got to be on it. Mm. Whereas when we come on, you can just watch. And even if you're not listening, we're like gallivanting around in 6-inch heels.
and the costumes, yeah, you don't even need to listen to
us. No, you don't even need to listen to us. We've got our boobs out.
They just look ridiculous.
The time. And we're just loud, and there's always two of us on stage, so there's always something going on.
Mm. Talk to me about the actual staging, because I've seen some of the pics. Is it in traverse?
It's traverse, So you have...
So how's that as a performer?
I love it.
I love it as
well. I've said this before, yeah. Someone asked us on one of our lives how we found it. For a director, it is the most challenging directing job you can take on. In the round, it's much easier because... it's in a circle, so your blocking's sort of done for you, whereas traverse is very difficult because the sides and sight lines are unbelievably difficult in very different angles. Sorry, I was just throwing because someone knocked on the door. So directing it is very difficult. However, working in traverse, for me, is a breath of fresh air. From a vain sort of point of view, you are always seen.
Which is perfect for your character.
I love it. Because we just, Holly Taylor, who plays my sister, we genuinely muck around. Obviously, in our characters, we are fully on characters. Like, even when we talk to each other, we won't talk to each other as Michaela and Holly on stage. Always be Clodagh and Dana, but we are just always doing stuff. And then you hear, even if it's just two or three people laughing at you, you're like, yeah, they're looking at us. Why is other people are looking at somewhere else? There is always...
You're like, we've pulled focus.
Yeah.
Well done.
Life's 3D, isn't it? And you just keep...
But also on that, it means that you have to stay in character all the time.
And that's a big thing in our cast as well. Even the ensemble have really developed and thought through characters... Because you have to. Because otherwise, you're vulnerable.
Yeah, it's not an ensemble where they come on and they're just dancing in the background.
They're just set movers.
Yeah.
Is there a lot of direct address? Because it looks like the audience are literally... It's on the same level as the stage.
None of it is...
We are the only ones that sort of break the fourth wall. There's no, audience interaction. Mm. Although we've had a couple where they shout out during our scenes. I love it.
Yeah. I had friends who came and they were a bit nervous, I think, because I'd booked their tickets on the front row. And so they heard Soho Cinders, so they thought it was going to be like a Cinderella in drag.
Yeah, they thought they were going to get kicked.
And then when they came and they sat on the front row, they were like, oh no, I hope they don't call us up. Feel nervous about coming and thinking, oh no.
No, it's not that at all.
There's none of that. You are more than welcome to stand and clap at the end.
Yes. It's a party at the end. Yeah. It literally is one big party. Mm. And everyone's just up dancing. And But no, we don't. We won't call you up. No, you're safe.
So talk to me about other roles, how you've got involved in this project, other roles that you've done previously, Tori.
Tori. She always takes the mic out of me. So I got involved with this because the director is a very good friend of mine. We trained together at Arts Ed on the 3-year musical theatre course, and we're in the same class in first year, and just stayed really good friends. Yeah, and so we Will got into directing 4 years ago, and directed Bad Girls, which I was in as well, which was great, which our new Velcro was in as well. And yeah, so he later on that year directed Soho Cinders at the Union Theatre, and which I went to see, and it was amazing. So he called me a couple of months ago in the summer and was like, I think we're going to put it back on again. Do you want to do it? And I was like, yes, please. And also Mickey and I knew each other as well, because Mickey was at Arts Ed while we were there. So, but on a different course. So we've known each other for about 10 years. Yeah. But only really to like say hello to, and not we weren't that close, were we? But yeah, so it's been lovely to get to work with people that I already knew, and really good friends as well. Again,
it's like a family.
It is. Like, and there's another guy who's the new William George, who starts a week today, who I did sixth form with at Arts Ed, so I've known him.
And degree course.
Yeah, and the degree course. So we did 5 years together at Arts Ed, and yeah, so I've known him for 13, 14 years. Yeah,
that's
which is
great.
Nice. Yeah. What was the other question?
So yeah, and so you trained at Arts Ed, but did you train at
LSNT too? Yeah. So I went to Arts Ed sixth form, and I did acting. I'm a bit younger than Tori. Mm. So when I was in sixth form,
we can't tell.
A little bit.
I don't know, when I was in ugly sister, I make up.
Oh, I've started
it's quite,
it.
It's quite difficult to tell what's underneath. You know,
and I'd literally just put it on. I was very natural today, wasn't I?
Yeah, you were.
I was in acting sixth form when Tori was in degree course, so I sort of knew Tori and, well, Will was in her year, and I was a little fangirl over Will. I just really remember. And then 3 years ago, I auditioned for Soho Cinders at the Union, and I did it. And Will and I became very good friends, and something happened. I won't go into what happened, but something happened, and Will said, I think we should do this. And I was like, yeah, let's do it. I've been producing for about 3.5 years. Mm. Will was working for Jamie Wilson's, a big production company, and he was Cameron McIntosh's right-hand man just before this. So it just felt right to do it. So, yeah, we co-produced the show, and he was like, you have to be in it as well. And I was like, yeah, I wouldn't be producing this show if I wasn't in it again. I have to reprise Clodagh, because I love her. I love her. So yeah, here we are.
Fantastic. Yeah. And the run goes on until
the 11th of January. We've extended now.
Yay.
We're meant to be closing this Saturday. Uh-huh. We've extended for another 3.5 weeks.
Oh, so is that why you're rehearsing at the
moment? That's why we've got cast change.
Because I did wonder why you'd be changing cast so near to Christmas when it's running to the end of January.
Yeah.
But, so that's because people had already gone on
to booked holidays or usually when you have a Christmas run, you have like the Christmas dates and blah blah blah, but we decided like into the run that would extend because the show's
it's been really successful, hasn't it? It's really exploded, got such a lovely response.
We've met some lovely people, haven't we?
Amazing.
You come back time and time again, and there's
and
so
especially
supportive.
In a theatre like this that's used to a very different audience.
Well, I mean, I've lived in London. I've sort of been to most theatres in London, and I'd never heard
weird,
of the Charing Cross Theatre before.
Right in
I've
the
walked
West End.
Past it.
Yeah, but yeah. You wouldn't
I think
know.
I thought it was, you know, there's a couple of little pubs and taverns.
Yeah.
I think I just thought it was.
Yeah, there is
part
the bar playing.
I come
bar.
Through Charing Cross all the time.
Yeah, but it's a weird one because this venue, well, it's one of the biggest off West End venues anyway, off West End, West End. That's bang in the middle of town. Mm. Well, the Arts Theatre is now classed as West End. It never was, but I believe it is now.
Yeah.
So now we are the only off West End venue in the West End.
Although you're literally
banging the West End.
Road away.
Yeah, we're banging the West End. It's down to salt. It's like being a member of the Society of London Theatre. That's how like they class West End and Off West End. But yeah, because you've got the other palette, the only, I'd say, similar venue is the other palace, which is Victoria,
which is much
Southwark
out,
Playhouse,
obviously.
Which is the other side of the river. So we are.
Then even then, the other palace is so near to where Hamilton's playing. Interesting classifications. So what advice then would you give to young people, either those who want to enter into the profession, so how to get there? Or those that are just sort of like, you know, treading boards for the first time, just trying to get the first jobs out of drama school?
My very first job, I remember someone saying to me, he was like, "God, you're so happy all the time. I hope you don't lose that." And I was like, oh, I just thought it was a really odd thing to say, because I'd always loved dancing and acting, and I only started singing when I went to Arts Ed, but performing was just what I'd grown up doing. And I
so to then get paid for
I was like, I cannot believe my luck right now. I'm getting paid to do what I've always wanted to do, and so it was just a really odd thing to say. But as time has gone on, I'm like, oh, okay, I get what he means now. And so I think,
was it someone who was in the profession?
Yeah,
someone
who was
older.
He was about
seasoned professional.
Yeah, not even that. He's about 5 years older than me. Okay. But he was just like, don't ever lose that, because he said I'm like that as well. He said, and don't ever lose that. And it's just always stuck with me. And so I think just really enjoy everything that you get to do. I think the hardest thing about acting is, well, getting into this profession is, there are certain people who do go from job to job to job. I haven't been one of those people, and I've had
You've worked a fair bit.
I'm grateful for the work I've done, and I've done all right, but I have had periods of where I haven't been performing, and so I think you just have to, it just makes you really appreciate when you do get a performing job, because you'll be, I don't know, like traipsing around the country doing sales or working in a port bar, and which are all fine jobs, but it's not what you want to do. So I think enjoy it and just really, yeah, make the most of the job that you're in, I think is my biggest advice, I think.
I would say just keep going. There are times, I mean, for me, especially this year, this came at an amazing time for me, both as a producer and as an actress. You don't realise that you need a job until you have it. And I was like, I needed this job. I needed it to remind
me.
But not just for, you know, like when people are like, oh, I could really do with being employed for a year and having that. It wasn't even a financial thing. I teach, and I teach privately, and I do very well financially from teaching. But there was something that I needed in this job to bring the spark back in me as a person, I think. Like, laughing on stage and being appreciated for your work that you do on stage has been amazing for me. Like, I really needed it this year, because this year I was like, I can't see a light at the end of the tunnel.
Oh, really?
And you always have those times where you're like, no, I'm giving up. There's only so many times you can be... I will say, I'm the girl, and this is a quote from my agent, that is always in a West End final. If I have an audition in the first round, my agent will know that I'll be in the final for it. Because I'm one of these people that just gets recall after recall after recall, great, doing it. Then I never quite land the gig. ever quite. There's always like something.
It's a touchy subject.
It's always.
Very honest.
Yeah, and it's hard. Like, my agent's called me up crying before. I mean, he'll be all right with it. Mm-hmm. And being like, I genuinely didn't know how to break this news to you. He's like, yeah, this is a tough one. This year it was Wicked. 3 years in a row I've been in the final for Wicked. And yeah, him telling me that I didn't get it was from Eternity cover. He was like, it's one of the hardest things I've ever done in my career. He's like, he hates doing it to me, because he's just always there. So you're always like, oh, I don't think I can do it anymore, I'm not strong enough. But you are, and you just have to keep going, because the jobs that you don't expect will change you and help you. And
yeah,
and any job is amazing. So just, I would say, keep going.
Yeah.
Keep going and take
the highs and the lows.
Every job's an experience.
Every job's an experience.
Yeah.
And it's a bunch of people as well.
Oh my God. Incredible
people that you might start your own theatre company with.
Yeah.
You might start producing.
I mean, exactly. Will and I met on a job.
You never know what's going
to
happen.
And Melissa the other day actually said, I love our cast because we just laugh. She's like, there's not a day where I've come into work and not laughed. And it's true. Yeah. We literally laugh, like crying,
belly laugh,
like proper laughing. And that's like...
Makes up for all the...
Oh, all the highs and lows. But yeah, my dad always says to me, always take the lows and the highs the same, treat them exactly the same. And that's something that I struggle with. Mm. But he's like, you have to treat success and failure exactly the same. It's their, you know, a monumentous moment in your life, regardless of what they are. So treat them the same, and you'll be all right.
It's
hard though to do.
Mm.
It's a real struggle.
My nan says as well, "What's meant for you won't pass you by," and I so believe that.
I agree.
And everything happens for a reason, which I know people hate, but
no, it's true.
It's true. Makes me feel better. You know, when you think,
I wasn't meant to do that.
I wasn't meant to do that. Something else is going to come along. And then a year, 2 years later, you're like, thank God I didn't get this job, because then I wouldn't
then
have done
this. Because
then you
wouldn't be free to audition.
But I've literally had that moment.
I've had it so many times and I'm like, oh my God, thank God.
I was meant to be doing
I'm
this.
I'm so happy I didn't get that job.
Me too.
But it might not come for like a year, 2 years, 10 years, whatever.
Yeah, and you're like, but I'd never be able to do this.
Even like me going to Arts Ed sixth form, I only ended up there because I got glandular fever. And I was meant to resit the year in high school, and my mum found a summer school in at the Arts Ed in London, had a sixth form, and she was
amazing.
So I auditioned for there, and then I was like, oh great,
just worked out.
Yeah, everything does happen for a reason.
Oh, absolutely.
I truly believe that.
I agree.
Yeah.
Oh, brilliant. Well, I shall let you girls finish your makeup and get yourselves ready, and I look forward
roast
to
dinner.
Seeing you out there.
Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So it's the interval at Soho Cinders, and I'm really enjoying this. It's really entertaining. There's loads of energy. The cast are fantastic. Really, really talented. Very young cast. And it's just rather sort of delicious and fun and cheeky and naughty and a modern kind of Cinderella story. The score is really... some quite catchy lyrics. It's quite funny. And I sort of found myself sort of humming some of the songs on the way out to the bar. And as far as intervals go, you kind of walk out into a bar, which is actually a pub, which is under Charing Cross as well. And the wonderful thing is that they serve teas and coffees. So I've got myself a nice Earl Grey tea. So really, really enjoying this sort of spirited, bubbly, lively and dynamic piece. I look forward to seeing the second half. Tips for Soho Cinders. So the theatre can be found right underneath Charing Cross Station. There's an extended run, and so it's now booking until the 11th of January. This does mean there's some slight cast changes on the 21st of December. However, Tori and Michaela, who we spoke to earlier, are running in the show right through till the end. It's 2.5 hours, including an interval. Programmes were £3, and you've got change from £3 for your ice cream, so cheapest ice cream in the West End. A fantastic night out, multi-generational appeal, great alternative to a pantomime. It says age 12 plus. I took my teenager with me and we had a great time. Curtains, a musical comedy at Wyndham's Theatre. With a book by Rupert Holmes and an original book and concept by Peter Stone and music by John Kander and lyrics by Fred Ebb, who are the creators of Cabaret and Chicago, it is no wonder that this is a Tony Award-winning backstage murder mystery musical. The blurb says, it's murder putting on a new musical, literally. Jessica Cranshaw, star of the new Broadway brand new musical, Robin Hood, has been murdered on stage on opening night.
The entire cast and crew are suspects. Time to call in our local detective, Frank Coffey. And this is played by Jason Manford, who just happens to be a huge musical theatre fan. With a nose for crime and an ear for music, Frank has his work cut out, trying to find the killer whilst giving the show a lifeline. So we've got Jason Manford in this. We've got Carly Stenson, who's playing Georgia Hendricks. And I'm really, really looking forward to seeing this show. It sounds like it's right up my street. So it's a musical, it's a comedy, it's a play within a play, or a musical within a play. So really, really looking forward to seeing this. And especially my old drama school chum, Corey English, who's playing the role of Oscar Shapiro. So it's The Interval at Curtains, a musical comedy. There are some great characters in this show. So it's a whodunit. The actors are all locked into the theatre as they're all murder mystery suspects. Very high energy, lots of choreography. The audience around us is really enjoying it. There's a lot of Americans in the audience. Some very, very catchy songs. A hilarious song about the critics. Right at the opening. Loving Emma Caffrey's character Bambi, and I've singled out an ensemble member who also plays a character called Randy Dexter, J.R. Ballantyne. Obviously loving Corey English. Jason Manford is hilarious. Some fantastic performances coming out of Alan Burkett as Bobby Pepper and Leah Barbara West as Nikki Harris. Really enjoying the the stagehand, Johnny Harmon, who's played by Minal Patel. He's got a real stage charisma. He's kind of put upon this character, so he's very, very funny. So really looking forward to seeing what's going to happen in the second half. I imagine there's going to be lots of plot twists, but it's really, really good fun, hilarious. Backstage at the Wyndham's Theatre with my old drama school buddy, Corey English.
Hello, Natalie.
And he's playing Oscar Shapiro in Curtains, a musical comedy.
Yeah, so whodunit musical.
Yeah.
Not many of those out there.
So I saw this on Saturday night and it was so lovely to see you on stage. I think the last thing I saw you in was Young Frankenstein, just up the road.
Yeah.
At the Garrick.
The Garrick Theatre. Mm. A couple doors down.
Yeah. So you just have to walk a little bit further.
Which
from
is
the station.
A beautiful theatre, which is a gorgeous theatre. But the Wyndham's Theatre, oh my God, it is gorgeous. I think it's the prettiest theatre I've ever performed in.
It really is. I mean, I was very lucky. I had seats in row D, so I was literally on top of the musicians in the pit.
It's wonderful.
But when we just walked through to this wonderful box backstage area. I got a completely different view from the stage. It's absolutely, what a beautiful
750 seater, four tiers, and it's just beautiful to look out at, I have to say.
Tell me about your role.
Of course, I'm totally in my character, but I'm not taking in the whole house, you know. I am in character, but it is nice to look out and see it.
Yeah, doing great stage business and active listening. Yeah. And so tell me about Oscar Shapiro.
Oscar Shapiro came along. Curtains wasn't supposed to come into the West End, but there was an opening in the theatre, in the venue, so they called Curtains to come in off of the road.
Man in the White Suit was here.
Yeah. To do 5 weeks. And so people in the cast had booked vacations, and some of them couldn't get refunds on it, I guess. And so they said, hey, Corey, you want to Jason Manford?
West End stint.
Jason Manford, who I've worked with before, he said, try and get Corey to come in. So I came.
A so recommendation always good.
I'm doing 12 performances, so I've got a week of Curtains, which is very exciting. Great little panto gig, Christmas gig, so it's fun.
So what have you worked with Jason on before?
Jason and I did Guys and Dolls at Royal Albert Hall. And
love Guys and Dolls.
Producers in 2015.
I remember that.
and I was his chaperone when he took me to Hong Kong on one of his stand-up tours. He was just being kind, and he asked me to go along with him.
Aww.
It wasn't a gig. I was just being a pal. Yeah.
Yeah, I saw some funny stuff on that Instagram on that, but I won't go into detail on the podcast.
Yeah.
So how do you prepare for a role like this? Your Oscar character.
Well, as you'll know, Natalie.
Yes.
From our drama school training.
Well, yes.
Our head teacher, Peter Layton, I don't know if you remember this in one of our lessons. He said, really preparing all comes down to time. So you may have 2 days to prepare, you may have 6 weeks to prepare. And that all depends on the budget of the production.
Uh-huh.
So this one was a bit funky because they're on the road and they've got to try and rehearse me. So I traveled down to Dartford and I had probably 10 hours of rehearsal.
Wow.
So preparing, and then I was going to be on my own for 12 days before I actually got my next rehearsal. So I had to rehearse myself quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So just a different process. So for me, it was just trying to learn the cues more than anything. Mm. Was to learn my cue lines. So I used the cue script from what we learned from Patrick Tucker way back when.
Oh, Patrick Tucker.
Yeah.
And the Shakespeare cue script.
Yes.
Was that original Shakespeare company?
That's right, yeah.
Do you know, I was thinking about that the other day because I went to see a friend of mine, Johnny Broadbent, who was playing Henry VI at the Sam Wanamaker Playhouse. And it suddenly brought back memories because I think in my scene study I was doing Queen Margaret and I was like, I know these lines. But I don't know the bits in between because you just had to learn your lines and
you
learn
only
the cues.
Learned your cues and your lines.
Yeah,
and that was it. So it felt like that.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is just concentrating on stage and being ready for when your cue is going to come up, because I didn't have all the people to rehearse with. I had one rehearsal with everybody, and then I was on.
Hmm.
So it was. Like a cue script kind
flying of by the seat of your pants.
Which made it very exciting.
Really?
and the whole process has been wonderful.
Yeah.
And we open tonight, so we'll see.
Yeah.
So I have
done
four performances.
Night, was it? Yes. I came to was that your first?
Friday night.
Friday night was your first. So I came. Yes.
You saw
Saturday
my
evening.
Show.
So your third show.
So you missed my second performance, Blues.
Oh.
So you saw the third night, which is usually a good night.
Yeah, and that third night was actually quite exciting because I think we were 10 minutes into the second half and there was a set moment of drama where it was beginning to... Well, it looked pretty secure, to be fair, but it looked like it was
the
going drop. And then they pulled the safety curtain down and said, we're just going to take a little breather. So it's about 10 minutes into Act 2, and the curtain's had to come down because a bit of the set's
ladies and gentlemen, can I have your attention just for a second? As you can probably tell, something must have arrived. Don't worry, we will get it sorted, and we will be back with you just as soon as we physically can. Thank you for your patience.
Always adds to the fun.
And we can hear people beginning to warm up backstage.
Yeah. I don't do the physical warm up as much anymore.
The splits with Bambi and stuff like that, the dance and ensemble.
I danced so much in my youth that I feel like my body's still warmed up from my 20s.
Oh, so I really, really enjoyed watching this performance. And obviously, you've done loads of other stuff. You've talked about the producers that you did with Jason Manford and Young Frankenstein that I saw at the Garrick, but you've done Chicago, you've done stuff on Broadway. Just take me through a whistle stop.
Well, it's interesting. I did do Chicago here at the Adelphi, and I understudied Mary Sunshine and Amos, and then I got to go on for Mary Sunshine for 5 months.
I can so see you as Amos.
And then I got to do Amos on Broadway in 2013.
Mm.
I did Guys and Dolls on Broadway, did a Guys and Dolls on the West End.
Mm. You haven't done Curtains before, though, have you?
No.
Is this a first?
Yeah. Mm. Gypsy I did on Broadway, and Damn Yankees, Hello Dolly, Funny Thing About a Way Forum.
Hello Dolly's coming back,
that's exciting. Mm. I was playing the breakdown for when I did it was he had to be 17, but the breakdown here is like 30. Yeah, very interesting. I'm thinking I can still play the part. Holy cabooses! To now when he's 30, holy cabooses! Right?
I think. Yeah, age is just a number. It's not, you know.
Yeah,
I reckon that's in the bag.
Yeah,
or, you know, definitely. And obviously, there's something really special in my heart that's coming out at the movie theatre, which is Cats, which you're in. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yeah, Cats was a huge surprise. I was at the barber's with my two boys. And agent called me about 2-3 in the afternoon and says, "Corey, can you be out to Warner Brothers Studio by 7? I said, "Yeah."
Thank you in the barbers.
Yeah, I think so. What's it for? Cats, the film. I said, "Do I have to play a cat?" I think so. So then, yes, cats. Then they confirmed it. They're like, "Yeah, you're playing a cat." I'm like, "Oh, okay, great, all right." So I sorted out childcare and got out to. Warner Brothers. There was four other guys that I was auditioning with.
Uh-huh.
And
for the same part?
For the same part.
Right.
We didn't really know what it was going to be, but we had to learn the Buster Jones song. We had to sing four lines from that. It was one of the funnest auditions I've ever had. These guys were a lot of fun. All, you know, we're all a short, fat character. And we were just having a hoot. I don't think we actually auditioned until about 9 at night because...
Oh, wow.
The director was working with Jennifer Hudson.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Darling.
Yes, darling. So we're like, Jennifer Hudson's in there. Oh, my God. Jennifer Hudson's in there. So, yeah, I don't think we left Warner Brothers until 10:30. Tom Hooper was lovely. The director gave us time. But, you know, it is 10 o'clock at night.
Mm.
It was late. So then that was on the Friday. And then I got the job on the Saturday, and I started on
fantastic.
The Sunday.
That Sunday?
Yeah.
Wow.
Sunday.
And your wow. And your cat's name is?
My cat's name is Maitre D. I'm sure you all remember it from the stage show.
Yeah.
Maitre D cat.
No. that really well-known.
Yeah, the
yeah,
Maitre
yeah,
D.
Yeah, the Maitre D. Black
Maitre
and white.
Maitre D all alone in the restaurant. No. they've added quite a few characters to help tell the story a bit better, if you all remember the story.
Yeah.
So basically, I'm a sidekick to James Corden's Buster Jones.
Nice.
And I show him the food he can eat. That was basically all they wanted me to do. So it was going to be 1 week rehearsal and then 1 week of shooting. But then after the week of rehearsal, they asked me to... join the whole film, do the entire film. So, yeah, it was 5 months of work, two months rehearsal, and then I think it was more than 3 months shooting.
Mm.
It was long, taxing, grueling days. Mm. But hanging out with Dame Judi Dench,
wow.
Ian McKellen, not to put Jason Derulo in the same sentence with those guys is odd. He was really a lot of fun.
Uh-huh.
Idris Elba, James Corden, Taylor Swift, Jennifer Hudson sang Memory 5 feet away from me over 50 times.
Wow.
And so the first 25 takes, right? If you can believe it, guys. The first 25 takes, we all felt her. After... 25 takes, probably the next 10, it lapsed a little bit. You know,
this
we weren't feeling it as much. I mean, this is over one day.
Wow.
Over one day.
Yeah.
And then the last 15 takes, she was gut-wrenching again.
Mm.
And we all were feeling it again. I don't know how anybody's going to sing that song after her.
Mm.
I'm sure they said
oh,
that way back when as well, but she just hummed. For a rehearsal.
I mean, you know, the benchmark was it Elaine Page?
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. When she did her camera rehearsal and she just hummed, we all tingled from her voice and like lumps in our throat.
Yeah.
And she was only humming. She was only humming.
And what were you doing at the same time? Were you kind of throwing shapes in the background?
No.
Active listening?
We were just active listening, sort of, I would say. Because we don't like her cat. And so all of us were away.
And
when she started singing, we felt compassion for her.
Yeah.
And we went more towards
drawn.
Her. But it was one of the best moments. Another moment was just... I was with Judi Dench a lot as well. And so,
oh, darling.
Just, I mean.
And at that time, when you were sat with Judi Dench, you thought back to moments in the drama studio where we were doing animal studies, didn't you? And you thought, I have used this now. This was worth it.
My cat, yes. I did. We had cat school. We did have cat school. And we did a lot of.
Do you have cats yourself?
No, I hate cats, really.
Yeah.
Mm. There's not a lot of cats that I like.
No.
I have some history with cats.
Do you?
I really do. Do you want me to tell that story?
No.
No.
You can tell me off.
Okay,
tell me more about Judi Dench.
The day that Ian McKellen and Judi Dench were in together, and Ian McKellen sang his song over 50 times.
Mm.
That was such a special day because to hear them tell their old stories, all of us, do you know what? It felt like a podcast.
Yeah.
Just listening to the two of them. Oh,
I think
amazing.
For me, the only sort of thing that I can sort of hang on to as part of that is when I saw Sir Ian McKellen on stage recently. And he did do a little bit of his Gus the Fierce.
Oh,
Cat.
Did he?
Yeah. He did an excerpt. And for me, I was like, that to me was, you know, very special.
He would go full out, so it'd be Judy's close-up, and Ian would sing full out his songs.
Wow.
And, you know, 79, he was 79, he wasn't quite 80 yet. And I swear to God, it was 10 o'clock at night, and Tom Hooper had him crawling through a hole in the set, on his hands and knees. He had to crawl through. Didn't complain, got on with the work.
Tom Hooper's tick list,
bucket list,
Ian McKellen to crawl through mud.
After 10 a.m.
After
10 p.m. Yes.
Yeah, tick. Oh. My work is done here. Oh,
so much fun.
Brilliant. Oh, it's been so lovely catching up with you. Oh, I was going to say, quick bit of advice for young people who are looking to go into the profession. What would you give them as...
Well, let's see. If you want to go into musical theater, go to a straight drama school. You can always... that's coming from a dancer, singer.
You've done a lot of musical theater.
Yeah, and I studied
in London.
Dance.
You did dance, yeah.
Full on at Broadway Dance Center back in the day. But I didn't learn how to tell a story back then. I just learned to be a dancer.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you really just want to be a dancer in shows, then... Yes, a dance school or a musical theater college would be probably just fine. But if you want to play principals, I have to say go to a straight drama school because you learn storytelling and you just put those rules that you learn from your acting and put it to a song or a dance. So that's where I say go for a straight drama school. When you're at drama school, if you can, at the 3-year program where you can get funding now.
Yes. Yes, that didn't exist.
No. So Natalie and I both did 1-year program.
Had to fund mine through TV shows.
I sold stocks to get mine. And I was very lucky that I saved enough money that I didn't have to work through the drama school year. Because you have no life. That's my advice. You don't have a life during drama school. You can have one afterwards. And I would encourage them afterwards to get a life. Have babies, get allotments,
do all the adult
stuff. Have a life. But while you're at drama school, don't judge while you're at drama school, because it will just hold you back and you're going to hit walls. And if you keep judging the teacher and yourself, you just have to jump in, as scary as it might be.
Just be open.
like yes. Beatrice's class.
What even, class was that?
Do you remember the movement class where we had to move a postcard?
Yes, yes, many, many a glance across the room and a what the are we doing?
But in the end, you will be grateful because you never know when your animal might come to life in a film.
What animal were you, Corey?
I was a vulture.
You were a vulture.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just, I went for lion, didn't I? I just slept.
Well, you should have been in a cat.
I just slept. I know, I should have been cat.
Just a smaller lion.
I should have been the one in the white cat suit, my favourite. So anyway, people are coming in through all the doors now. It's all right. We're about to go to warm up. You're off to warm up. Press night tonight.
Press night tonight. The show's in great shape.
It's in great shape.
Yeah, Jason Manford is really funny. Really funny and good, and he does shine. I think it's his best role yet. It's very exciting to watch.
The whole cast are brilliant. I really enjoyed Bambi. I thought she was very funny, actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
So definitely recommended from Theatre Audience Podcast, and it was wonderful to chat to you, Corey.
Nice to catch up now.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to going to see Cats the movie.
I'll be a proper cup of coffee in a proper cup of coffee pot. I'm never good at this.
Hello.
Hello, how are you?
Hey, Corey.
So it was great chatting backstage to Corey. This is a real feel-good musical. It has great musical arrangements by Sarah Travis. The orchestration is fantastic. This would make a great Christmas present. It seemed like a slightly older audience, but I think that's due to the fact that it goes by its reputation, which is curtains and musical comedy. It's a whodunit. It's a musical within a musical. And obviously it's the work of Kanda and Ebb of cabaret and Chicago fame. Having said that, I have my teenager with me who thoroughly enjoyed it. So I believe it has a multi-generational appeal and would suit kids over the age of 12. So it's meta theatre. It laughs at itself. There's some hilarious moments, particularly the song Show People, which is really, really funny. There's a song called What Kind of Man, where the foursome of Carmen, Oscar, Georgia and Aaron, so played by Rebecca Locke, Corey English, Carly Stenson and Andy Coxon, talk about how dare this theatre critic give their show within a show a bad review. And this is cleverly executed with some brilliant choreography from Alistair David. A really lovely sort of mood and atmosphere conveyed in that one. Rebecca Locke really shone in her Carmen Bernstein number called It's a Business, which was supported beautifully by her ensemble dancers. And one of the funniest moments in the show was a number called The Woman's Dead. I loved the fake mourning of the cast within the cast when their leading lady gets killed in the opening number, or the final number of the show within the show, when so many of them have sort of understudy roles being promoted to main roles to sort of gain. So that's all really good fun. The only thing that I would say is obviously this was a preview, and the ensemble there was great energy and fantastic choreography, but at times like one or two of them really shone for me. So Nia German and J.R. Ballantyne, they were really giving it their absolute everything. They had the full sort of Kanda and Ebb, that cabaret style. And I'm not sure whether that was fully realised throughout the whole of the ensemble. They really stood out for me, and I think probably this has been picked up because Paul Foster's a fantastic director and this is an absolutely brilliant show, so I'm sure he would have given the rest of the ensemble some notes on that in the previews. So really love Jason Manford and Leah Barbara West. They had great chemistry. He really embodied that detective that would be the director. The set by David Wood was just beautiful. Really clever, ingenious, forming the theatre within the theatre, and ways to show sort of the backstage and the front of house and the rehearsal area, as this cast and crew get locked into the theatre. And I had really great seats in row D, right in the centre. So I got every breath, bit of spit, reaction, mannerism, idiosyncrasy and character choice.
Top tips for curtains. So the production runs at 2 hours and 45 minutes, including an interval. The production has already been on tour and has come into London and closes on the 11th of January at Wyndham's Theatre. It then continues round the country on tour right through spring. We got our tickets on Today Tix. We were in row D, seats 16 to 18, and our tickets were £32 each. We had a fantastic view of the stage.
And now for my finale and curtain call. If you want to go and see something with the family that's really Christmassy, I would recommend Nativity, The Snowman, White Christmas, or A Christmas Carol. Now on sale for early purchase, which are the hot tickets for the beginning of next year, are productions To Kill a Mockingbird, Uncle Vanya, and Leopoldstadt. Hot tickets at the moment that are selling really fast and prices are beginning to rocket are for And Juliet, Mary Poppins, and of course Girl from the North Country, which has just opened. If you listen to my next episode, you'll hear backstage interviews with Gemma Sutton and Ferdy Roberts. Why not grab a ticket for one of the productions mentioned in this episode? Please tune in next time and recommend us to all your friends and family. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast, and do send us any recommendations of things you think we should see and review. If you've enjoyed the show, please follow us on Spotify, subscribe and rate us on iTunes, and leave us a little review. Until next time, goodbye, and thank you for listening.